Today's daf in Masechet Psachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Vav, and we're holding at the Chelek HaMishnah on daf Ayin He Amud Beis. Nagab Charsor Shel Tanur. Now we're going to be talking about the actual dinim of what might happen to a Korban Pesach in the process of cooking. So remember, we've got a very, very sensitive situation here, because only Tzli Esh is mutter, not Tzli Esh actually creates a not kosher Pesach. It's not just that it isn't something that is done properly, it's usur to eat it. It isn't kosher. It's a carbon pasul. So because of that, anything that would cause any part of the carbon Pesach to be considered not a Tzli Esh would be a problem, because I wouldn't be able to eat it. I wouldn't be able to eat that part. So we already spoke about the questions about whether you would have an area of the Pesach that perhaps you had boiled outside and things like that, and that would make the whole thing not a problem of a Gedim Mekulis. Now we're talking about an actual Korban Pesach, where, let's say, part of the Pesach touches the Cheres of the Tanur. Now that would mean that because the Tanur is hot, remember we started off discussing the spit, and the spit itself is a problem, because if it's made out of metal, then because of its high conductivity of heat, it's going to end up conducting the heat to the inside, and then the Pesach will be cooked by the heat of the Shpud instead of by the heat of the fire. And as we have the Pesach that stresses Tzli Esh twice. So over here, what happens if on the outside, the Korban Pesach, some of it fell a little bit too close to the edge of the oven, and it touches that, and then that part is actually cooked by the heat of the oven and not by the heat of the fire. And because of that, you have to peel it off. Yiklof et mikomot. So that means you have to take a thin surface off of it, just enough that it will hold together. And therefore, you would avoid eating any of the Pesach that was treif. Treif because it's a korban pasul. Now, here we get to a very interesting question. Suppose some of the gravy, some of the dripping fats that come off of the Korban Pesach fall onto the oven, and they splatter. Now, they splatter back onto the Pesach. Now, that would mean that those parts of the gravy that were cooked at that point by the oven itself, the heat of the earthenware, rather than by the fire, they are pasul. And therefore, when they go splatter back onto the Pesach, they will passel the part of the Pesach that they land on. And in that case, you've got a bigger problem, because in that case, you cannot just have a klipa. Klipa is just a very thin outside area that touches. But when you've got fats, you've got boiling fats, they penetrate more deeply into the meat, and because of that, you need more than that, you need kedei nitila, not just kedei klipa. These are important terms that we're going to be using, obviously, throughout the Torah, especially when we get to Chulin, talking about the dinim of basar b'cholov and treifas and tarovas. So over there, these are going to be very common terms. Maybe you remember them. Kedei klipa or kedei nitila. Kedei nitila means that you have to take off a thick piece, which is the thickness of a finger, and only then can you be certain that it hasn't penetrated further than that. We'll see that there are cases when the entire thing becomes us. So here you have to be notel et mikomo. Now, how about if there was some flour and some of the gravy dripped onto the flour? Then you have to be komets et mikomo. You're going to have to remove a whole handful. That's kmitza. And we're going to see in the Gemara this talking about where it was hot flour, and the hot flour therefore heated up the gravy, and because of that, that whole area would be usher to eat, because then that gravy is cooked by the heat absorbed by the flour, and therefore any part of the flour that has any of that gravy in it is going to be usher to eat. Socho b'shemen truma. Now we have a different issue. Remember that we need to have tzli esh, which means that it can't be boiled. However, you are allowed to do what you normally would do with sicha, and with sicha, what you normally do is you do basting. You're allowed to baste the Korban Pesach, and that's considered to be the derech of tzliya, not of bishul. So suppose you use, this is not talking about using hot oil, obviously that would be the problem, that area would then be considered mevushel. So suppose you used shemen, which was kosher, except it was shemen truma, and now you have Yisraelim, who are members of your Korban Pesach group, What do you do? So if the entire group is Kohanim, obviously there's no problem. Yochelu. If you've got the Yisraelim, what do you do? So if the meat is still raw, it's not a problem. Because if it's raw, it doesn't absorb. It's not hot. And therefore, you just rinse it off. The Rambam adds the word rinse and dry. But rinse it off. And im tzlihu, if it's already roasted, then you need to take off the klipa. And that is, this is because the heat itself will allow it to absorb more. How about if, so now the reason we don't have to do a lot is because there's just, when you're basting, you just take a little tiny bit on a basting brush and so on. And therefore, we're not cheshish that it's penetrated more deeply than bichtei klipa. Obviously, if it was literally sitting in some type of not kosher substance and it was oily, then we would have to ask for possibly the whole thing, as we'll see later on. Now, suppose the shemen that you used was shemen of Maaser Sheni. Okay, what's the big deal? You're allowed to eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. So, the problem is this. When you present the bill to all of the people that were registered on your Korban Pesach, this is like really down and dirty stuff here, because, I mean, we're getting into all the things you really need to think about, you know. When you go out to a restaurant together, you know, you need to add up everything if you're going to be going Dutch, right? So, I mean, the tip, what about the drinks and so on? Okay, now over here, somebody comes up with a brilliant idea. Wait a minute. We spent $5 on that oil of Maaser Sheni, and that's got to be split between us. The problem is that you're not allowed to sell Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. You can eat it, but you can't sell it. Because the reason is that the Torah says only kiyarbel amakom. If you have a lot, you're bemim chaderach, you have a lot of place to go, ad amakom, till the place. Then venatata bekesev, then you're allowed to exchange them for money, but you can't do that stam. So therefore, you can't charge them for it. You see, so lo yaseru damim al bnei chabura. So therefore, the people that are registered, they don't split that, because that would be paying and selling maaser sheni. Shein mochrin maaser sheni b'Yerushalayim. Now, unbelievably, we've seen through this entire masechet, every last issue becomes the model for an entire idea that appears throughout Kol HaTorah Kula. And that's why we've been going from the beginning. We've been dealing with all of the issues of Isurei Achila and Isurei Hana, just because we needed to deal with the Dinim of Chometz. And that became the marker. And when we moved on to discuss the Dinim of Tuma, all of a sudden, all of the questions that we needed to decide about Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim, and so it comes from Erev Pesach, and how we would have to be knowing with Truma Tame and Truma Tor and the burning of it and so on. Then when we got to the Dinim of Kochim directly, which we'll be talking about over here, we've been looking at the Korban Pesach now as the Mokar of all kinds of Dinim. And today, this Mishnah leads us into some very esoteric territory. And that is in Kol HaTorah Kula, where we have two major areas, Basar B'Cholov and Taroves. Those are two separate prokim, Giranosh and Kol HaBosar, which take up so much of the Shulchan Aruch. It turns out that one of the most significant issues that needs to be defined is we understand that there's a difference between hot and cold in terms of absorption. But how do you decide which is hot and which is cold if you have a mixture? Where do we look at the end result? And that is the question. Something hot falls into something cold, or something cold falls into something hot. Does it make a difference what falls into what? Now, you understand that on the surface, this should be linked to so many different issues. It should be linked to the difference between a liquid and a solid. It should be linked to the relative difference of the temperatures. It should be linked to the amount of material that is hot and the amount of material that's cold, and so on and so forth. In reality, as the Noda B'Yuna points out, many of the Mefarshim point out, this is therefore too complex to define as a given in each case. So therefore, what we need to do is we make an approximation. Now, normally we don't need to deal with approximations because it used to be, remember, that we went to a kapila nuchra. So if it wasn't something that would be min b'mina, which was would have been indetectable, we would simply have a professional taster, a goy, taste it and tell us in cases where we're not sure if the iser is detectable in the heter, is it or isn't it? Does the meat taste like it's got milk in it or vice versa? All of that could have been done with a kapila nuchra, with a professional goyish chef who we know is not going to risk his reputation to lie to us. We're going to find out that he was lying. But we don't rely on kapila nuchra any longer. And because of that, we went and we made the dinim that we have today of bitul b'shishim as a standard. We don't go ask about it. We don't look at it. The same way that we have that concept of bitul b'shishim, we also have a concept of going either according to the thing which was on the bottom or the thing which is on the top. And the bottom is called tator gavar. The top, that would mean that if it is hot, then it will warm the thing that is falling into it and turn it into the equivalent of a mixture of hot things. And if it's cold, it will cool the thing that falls into it and turn it into a mixture of cold things. Or perhaps ilah gava. Now that's a machlokas. We paskit tata gava. In this determination, the Shulchan Aruch spends two brief se'ifim discussing this din of tata gava and how he paskins that Tatar Gavar, as we're going to see, as Shmuel. If you take a look at the Pisrei Tshuva, on those two Se'ifim are 50 separate Se'ifim dealing with the details. So, because of that, we're going to look just again at this Sugya as the Mokar of the overall general concept of Tatar Gavar versus Ilah Gavar, get into that, and we'll see that there are other issues as well that come out of this circular negel, kol ha'Torah kula, one page of Masechet Pesachim, turns out to be central to understanding all sugyas all over Shas and throughout the Shulchan Aruch. So this one sentence, which was the question of Nagaba Chasosha Tanur, the question of Notaf, what happens, something drips. So because of that, we raise the general question, Itma. Normally, if you have a hot food that falls into something that's hot, it's a liquid, we're assuming, or vice versa. So everybody would agree, if both things are hot, so for sure, we have to assume that it's going to be absorbed, one from the other, and therefore, it's going to be usher. That's for sure. Question starts, if it's not hot, okay, how about if both are cold? Well, and then for sure, there's no absorption, both of clothes, we rinse it off, and there's no problem. But what happens if something hot falls into something cold, or something cold falls into something that's hot? What then? So Rav says it's always the one on top that defines it. Shmuel says it's always the one on the bottom that defines it. The technical language, besides the words klipa and atila that we learned today, is tator gavar, according to Shmuel, versus ilor gavar, according to Rav. As it turns out, because of the way the brises work out, we paskin in this case, even though normally we call Shmuel Melech El Asar, the guy we don't paskin like when it comes to Isser, El Asar. And in this case, we paskin like Shmuel, and that's because in other places we find it's also Machlokas Abayev Rav, and we paskin like Rav, who happens to like Shmuel. So in any event, that's how we paskin. Tator Gova. Now, on the surface, as I said, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, to make that under any and all circumstances, not to mention the question of why don't we just experiment? I mean, it's not hard to experiment with this kind of thing. So, again, as the Mefarshim explained, ein hadavar muchlat. It won't matter what the experimental results are because there are so many factors to take into consideration. We can't really give an answer. So what we're trying to do is basically make a chumrah to make certain that people understand that we need to take into consideration the depth of absorption. And because of that, we'll deal with the generalities. The same way we do with an iser of shishim, and we pretend that shishim is a shir, and it's a given, and you're always going to be able to detect a tam in shishim, which of course is not the case in reality. So many of these halachos, because of that, when it comes to questions where it's just egregiously ridiculous. I mean, you got something that is is 100 degrees hotter than the thing that it fell into. And there's also 10 times as much of it, and so on and so forth. Well, over there, it's sort of absurd to say tatar gravar. So there's cases where it gets just to the point where it's absurd. And there you need to use a little bit of common sense to recognize you may have a problem of iser, even though the tatar was cold. Okay, there's even a suggestion of the Aruch HaShulchan, which nobody accepts. But there's a suggestion of the Aruch HaShulchan that the entire discussion must be limited to identical amounts of material, because otherwise it's really crazy. And nobody accepts that, which is surprising. I mean, it sort of makes sense, right? Okay, so again, it's not a question of experiment, and it's not a question of it's being a machloket in Metzias, which we know the famous Nechemet says. There's no such thing. The Gemara doesn't argue about realities that can be defined by experiment. It's the question of how Chazal were koveya us to be knowing. One of the clearest indications of this is, by the way, the question of whether the lower thing was a liquid, if we pass get the Torah Gava, and then it would be a case in which you would need bichte klipa, right? So what do you do if it's a liquid? So there are those who tell you, like the Ran, that if it's the bichte klipa, then analyze how much of the material would be klipa, would have been usher, and then you would need to be mavato that klipa b'shishim. Now that would be, if we're really taking this seriously. But others, most of the poskim learn, and I'm to say poskim, I mean the Rishonim, even here on the daf, including the Tosfos, if it's bichte klipa of a liquid, there's no such thing as bichte klipa. Why? Because you can't be calling for liquid. So therefore, the idea of klipa didn't apply at all. In which case, you don't have to worry about shishim kenegana klipa because there simply isn't any klipa. What do you do about the reality? The reality is not what we've been talking about here at all. And because of that, we can sort of approximate these dinim the same way that we've done our approximation throughout this mesechet in so many ways, including the value of pi, including the value of the square root of 2, and relying on those approximations, halacha lemaisa, because the Torah wants us to approximate. It is not a question of sitting around with instruments to be able to navigate your way around the world. It's given to Adam without instruments. So therefore, Chazal or koveya these shiurim as well. Now, the question, of course, the reason that we brought this up over here is because it seems to be a reflection of the dinim in our Mishnah directly. Let's take a look at our Mishnah and see. Tanah. Nataf miro tevo ala cheres v'chazare lav yitolet mikomo. Now, what happens over here? Some of the gravy drips off of the Korban Pesach, falls onto the tanur. Well, maybe not. Now, hold on a second. We explained it that it's the tanur. Mishnah didn't say anything about a tanur. The Mishnah said cheres. Now that cheres could simply have been a plate, a china plate. And that's what we assume is the situation first before we get to the way we understood the Mishnah. So assuming that what we're talking about over here is that it's a plate, so then it might be talking about a cold plate. Plates are usually cold. So becheres tzonenet. Nonetheless, it says that if the gravy bounces back onto the carbon, then the carbon is going to be usher. Now, according to Rav, who says, yes, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. The gravy was hot, and it fell onto the plate. The plate didn't cool it off because we don't go according to the cool lower surface. We go according to the hot upper surface. So therefore, when it bounces back, according to Rav, it means that the gravy has actually heated the cheres, and now that would mean that the gravy itself is absorbing heat from the cheres, which even though it came from it, doesn't matter. It's now a secondary source of heat, which passes the Korban Pesach. Now when it bounces back, it's trefa gravy. So Mishumachi Yitolet Mekomo, that would explain why you have to cut bichtei netila. That's a serious amount of cutting, but it's a finger's breadth worth of the area on which it fell. And that's because first the gravy is meratach lecheres, boils up the cold plate because we go according to the upper surface. Note, we're going according to the upper surface. It's not simply the interrelationship between the two things. It's the fact that the upper thing, according to Rav, will actually heat the lower thing. Then the lower thing is now hot. It's not that it transfers its heat. And now that it's hot, it's going to, you understand that none of this makes sense in terms of the way that we're stating it, because, I mean, obviously there's going to be heat lost. How much heat was lost? How long was it on the plate? How could the plate possibly transfer more heat than it got? None of this makes any sense, right? So once it is that we're making the determination, how do we call what's hot and how do we call what's cold? Then we don't start making these analyses as per the particular situation. The plate is now hot, according to Rav. A hot plate, Asher's gravy of a Pesach. Yeah, but it only got the heat from the, I don't care. It's a hot plate. Okay, so the hot plate now, Asher's the gravy of the Pesach, which had given its heat to it. And now when it bounces back, it's going to be absorbed in the korban, and you're going to be eating non-kosher gravy. So v'chiyada rota v'Pesach, now it's going to turn out that the Pesach itself turns out to have in it partial heating from the heat of the cheres of the plate, which was heated by not directly tzliyesh. And the Torah says it has to be tzliyesh. Lo tzlimach mas davar acher. And therefore you're eating something that's not kosher. It's a non-kosher korban. That's the problem. But according to Shmuel, this whole thing makes no sense. The gravy falls on the plate. The plate is the tata. Therefore, the gravy is now cold. So what the heck is wrong? There's nothing wrong. So the cheres now being tzonen is considered to be akuri maker lelorotav. So nothing went wrong. So now the gravy went back on. Amayitolet mikomo. I don't understand. Why would you have to get rid of it? It's perfectly kosher. So this really doesn't make any sense at all. So what we've got to say that Kediomer Rabbi Yirmi Amar Shmuel, we're going to be seeing in a moment that when we get to the question of falling on into the flour, which doesn't make any sense. I mean, if the flour is cold, according, it's the same problem, according to Shmuel. And there Rabbi Yirmiya, quote Shmuel, is saying, well, obviously the Mishnah is not talking about cold flour. It's talking about hot flour. So that's what we're talking about over here, hot cheres. In which case, we don't have to talk about a plate. We could be talking about that it touched the actual tanur itself in which it was being soluit. It's not. Another issue from our Mishnah is the next piece, of course, which we just quoted from. If the gravy falls onto the flour, and we're assuming the flour is cold, you have to be kometz et mikomo. Now, I mean, assuming, kasakataitach, here's our assumption. The solet is cold, right? So now, bishlam al rav, the amri logov. According to Rav, this makes sense. I need to get rid of this gravy in the flour. Why? Because first, the flour got heated by the gravy, because you go according to the hot gravy that falls in. So it's meratak lele solet. That now makes the solet hot, which then heats up the area. And that solet actually turns around now and it heats up the gravy. In which case, you now have the gravy roasted by the flour. And that is not tzliyesh. So you have to get rid of the flour that has absorbed any of that non-kosher gravy. But according to Shmuel, who says Tatar Govar, if the flour is cold, then the gravy is cold. So what's wrong? Loma leyikmotz et mikomo. Why should I take anything away from its place? Now here we have a problem in the next five words, which Rashi says makes no sense. Cut them out, because it says it should be enough if I just bitol et mikomo. If I just take the gravy out from where it is, I shouldn't need to take a whole handful. Now, Rashi says, what do you mean? I shouldn't have to do anything. If the flour is chilled, so then there's nothing wrong. This is the gravy from the Korban Pesach. I mean, if you want to remove the gravy from the Korban Pesach, that's your business. But you don't have to take out anything, right? So why would the Rashi says, somebody threw this in misunderstanding the sugya. Why do I need to take away anything? Says Tosfos, no. There's a very important point in this entire sugya. And that is, we cannot be discussing gravy that had drip that was fully tzolui. Because if it was fully tzolui, who cares if it gets additional heat from anything? You're not going to recook it, right? It's already tzolui. So why would it become non-tzliyesh? Because you added heat from somewhere else. So obviously it's still in the process of cooking, says Tosfos. Otherwise, whole sugya doesn't make any sense. If it's still in the process of cooking and it falls into cold flour, what is it? It's a Pesach that is semi-cooked, which is an issur d'oraisa. Al tochlu mimenu na. So you've got another problem. You've got semi-raw gravy, and therefore it's treif because of the other problem. So anyway, you'd have to get rid of the area around it. That's histosis, is the reason why it says you'd still have to take out that area. Lovely. Okay. All right. So in any event, it seems to be pretty clear over here that we go according to Rav, and that the gravy is what defines the heat level. And here is where Rabbi Yirmiyah said that Shmuel explained the Mishnah as referring to Solet Rotachat, which makes the whole thing fit with Shmuel. Now, let's take a look in the Mishnah further. It says over here, if you used for basting, you used Shemen Shel Truma, and everybody is a Kohen, there's no problem. But if you've got Yisraelim, as long as it's still raw, you can wash it off. As I said, the Rambam holds in all these washing off cases, you also have to dry it to make sure that you get everything off. And then it's okay. Well, how about if it's roasted? If it's roasted, then you have to take off kedei klipa, which is the lower shear, not kedei netila. And according to Rav says ilo agavar. Now, I must tell you that ilo agavar, a few of those 50 seifim of the Pesachei Teshuvah are dedicated to figure out what is called ilo and what is called tata. Because, as the Rashba points out, in a case where something falls into a liquid, if it sinks into the liquid, then what was previously ilah becomes tata. What was tata is ilah. So how can we possibly be giving a blanket statement about that? So it's because of that that some of the Mefarshim, indeed, in the Taras Habayis, that it doesn't really matter gravitationally what's ilah and what's tata. It matters what's in its place. So in other words, that which is held in its original makom, that would be the thing that would have the most impact. The Truma Sadeshan doesn't hold like that. I mean, he learns that it's a matter actually of gravitation. Because according to him, because of gravity, you're going to have convection of the heat, and therefore the heat's always going to be going upward. Okay, I mean, then you've got other things that because of the additional pressure, which is, again, gravitational. So therefore, that pressure causes the upper one to impact the lower one in a different way. Again, as I say, there's so many different factors to take into consideration that I don't know that we have to go into everybody's looking for some inherent logic, obviously. But when it comes to defining which is the ilah, which is the tata, you should just know that there are many different approaches. Of course, like, yeah, what if it's side by side and so on, right? So what share would we get? All right, so anyway, so according to Rav, who says ilah gavar, so I understand that because of that, it's good enough to take off just the klipa. Why? And there won't be any problem of truma. Because in this case, the oil that I put on, which is the upper one, as I put it on to the lower one, so that's cold. And because it's cold, it's not going to be penetrating at all. But according to Shmuel, if we're talking about the meat, which is hot, and you've put oil on top of it, and he holds the lower one, which is the meat in this case, would absorb, so then why would klipa be sufficient? I mean, basically, we should say the entire carbon should be usher for the Yisraelim, because it's absorbed truma. And the din is that when you have something oily that is on something that's hot, the oil is mifa'afea bekulo, as we had in Chulin. It goes all through it. And how do you explain that? Well, we'll have to say that indeed you're right. According to Shmuel, theoretically, the whole thing would be usur, except for the fact that there really isn't enough oil there to usur. And if you're going to tell me that the little bit of oil that you put on with your brush is enough, the basting oil is enough to usur, the whole thing would be bato b'shishim if it really went all the way through it. So basically, we're just going to be makbid on the klipa. And that's why in this case, it's enough for klipa. Okay. So the mashu, bi'almahu, the avida, all I've done is put a little bit of a mashu in it, and that should be enough. Tanya kavati d'shmua. Cham l'tocham asur. Now here, in these brises, we're going to be bringing Aliba to Shmuel, is the reason we end up paskening like Shmuel, part of the reason. As I mentioned to you, the other places where we find that other shitas argue along the same lines, and over there, the rules of Psak end up being that we pasken the same way that Shmuel is paskening, namely Tato HaGavar, even though usually we would pasken like Rav in a machlokas with Shmuel about Iser. So here's one of the reasons. The Baraita seems to be saying clearly like Shmuel. It says, if something hot was put onto something hot, so then they become Iser. And in fact, if something cold was put into something hot, it would be Iser. Well, if that's the case, then you're telling me Tato HaGavar, right? If something hot goes into something cold, or something cold goes into something cold, then all you need to do is mediach. All you need to do is rinse it off. Okay, so now when you said cham letoch tzonin, take something hot and put it into cold, you can't be serious. I mean, you're telling me because Shmuel holds that the bottom is cold, so therefore it's enough for me just to wash it off? Wait a minute, I understand that you're telling me overall, when the reaction between these two things is completed, I need to look at it as being cold. But, I mean, surely we're not suggesting that this is instantaneous, right? I mean, it takes a certain amount of time till the cooling effect of, let's say, the liquid that was on the bottom affects the thing that's on top. Well, during that time, isn't there at least the absorption of a klipa? I mean, we said even the tiny, didn't we just start off a minute ago by saying even a little bit of basting oil is going to aser b'chde klipa, that's a mashahu. So, I mean, surely in the 5 seconds, I mean, whatever, there's got to be a mashahu of absorption, even according to Shmuel. So how could you be saying that you simply wash it off? That doesn't make any sense. Could that be? I mean, given the chamu, adem makerle, in the process of chilling off that which was hot, it's impossible for there not to be a little bit of absorption. Dolo bala purta, and at least klipa mini boy. I mean, certainly we should at least take off the surface area where there definitely was mixture, right? So isn't that going to make the tremendous difference? You can't say media. You're right. The Braita should actually be understood like this. The part where it says cham letoch tzonein is klipa. When we're referring to hadacha, we were talking about tzonein letoch tzonein. If it's tzonein letoch tzonein, then there's no period of absorption whatsoever, and then all I need to do is wash it off. Tanya Yidach, another braita like Shmuel, you've got hot meat that falls into hot milk, or you have even cold meat that falls into hot meat. Both of them are usher because of basar b'chalav. Now, that again is telling me that the lower thing, in this case it was hot milk, then both of them become usher. But if hot meat falls into cold milk, or cold meat falls into cold milk, all you need to do is wash it off. What? It's the same problem. How can you say all you need to do is wash it off? I mean, if hot meat falls into the cold milk, I mean, certainly, kiman dechamu, it takes a measurable amount of time for it to cool. So Adam Makerle, as it's cooling, EF should lo bola purta, it must have absorbed a little bit. And klipa mina boy, I should at least need to peel off that outside layer of the meat, which is now basar b'chalav. Note that it does not talk about how I peel off the layer of the milk. I'm only peeling off the layer of the meat. So as I said to you before, this is a machlokas rishonim. Do I need to take off shishim, keneged what would have been the klipa in the milk, and make sure that there's not basar b'chalav b'chdei shishim to aser it? Or do I say, since something which is liquid cannot be defined as needing klipa, therefore there is no such thing as the iser of the klipa, which again ties into the approach of approximations that we're able to deal with seriously. Okay, so therefore we have to change it again to say that tzonin letoch tzonin is mediach. Obviously, the cham letoch tzonin would be kolif. Omar Mar. Now, you said before, tzonin letoch tzonin, we only need to be mediach. Now, the question is, are there other issues which facilitate absorption besides heat? And, I mean, let's be real. Doesn't it matter how absorptive a surface is? I mean, there are things, look, we said before, we're talking yesterday about dam in the heart and so on. If you've got a layer of membrane that is so thick that it provides basically a plastic coating to the chambers of the heart, it's not going to be absorbed at all. So, I mean, let's talk about the surfaces for a minute, right? Omer mar tzonin letoch tzonin mediach. Omer avuna. Okay, first of all, we're talking about where it hadn't been salted. If it had been salted, then you've got another problem, because the salt itself obviously is going to change the entire chemistry of the exchanging of, this is exactly what we do with salt, right? So it's going to end up facilitating transfer between the two items. Once it's salted, so then you've got a problem. And if that basar that was salted basar fell into the cholov, it is going to exude into that cholov. Milacho asur. The Omar Shmuel, salting is the full equivalent of cooking. It's as if it's hot. So it's harehu kiroteach. It's the same as if it's hot. And therefore, in terms of transfer, it's going to transfer. It doesn't mean that it absorbs, but it will actually cause itself, because of course that's what happens. It doesn't want to absorb, but it will exude its own juices into the other thing. The Omar Shmuel Meliach Areo Kiroteach. And what's more, said Shmuel, Kavush Areo Kimavushal. So if you had put something into, let's say, vinegar, then the vinegar is considered to be a boiled material. And if it's Mevushal, it's as if it was cooked together. And therefore, the entire thing would be oyster, just like cooked in a pot. Now, the question is whether this is dafka, utilizing materials which cause pickling, such as vinegar, obviously salt we already spoke about, or whether this is even true for even water if it's been together long enough. Now, there's all discussion. It's that 24 hours, what the different types of kovush would be considered for different types of liquids. But kovush areo kemevushal. Amar Rava, this idea of salting does not mean a little bit of salt that falls into something. When Shmuel says that we have to treat something that's salted as if it's literally hot, lo amrana l'shelo ne'echo machmat milcho, aval ne'echo machmat milcho lo. That's only where it is salted to such an extent that it's uncomfortably salty to eat. That's what Rashi learns here. In other places, Rashi learns that lo necho machmat milcho is where it's been preserved by salt. So you're talking about like meat, you know, one of these salamis that they make so deep salt it has to be washed off a little bit before it's even roy to eat. And it turns out that there are different levels of shir machmas milcho for different issues, but just a light salting does not apply. Now, it happened that a bird, a barguzla, which was a pigeon, fell into this barrel full of kamra, which is, of course, metz de kutach. Kutach is made out of whey and milk, so it's very milchic. So Rav Chinina, Brei de Rava Mipashronia, said, it's okay, enjoy. Amar Rava, wow, you got to be a genius. See, I mean, that looks about as awesome as you can get, right? So it takes a real pesach to tell you just enjoy it. Who is smart enough to be matir something like that? If not, Reb Chinina Berei de Rava Mipashronia is a genius. Yigavu Rava, and he says the reason it's kosher is because Shmuel is who we paskin like, and over here it was cold. And the only time that Shmuel said that when something which is salted is the equivalent of being hot, and this is salted, is only benogea eno nechal machlet milcho. But this kamcha is nechal machlet milcho, and therefore even if we say tator govar, we could just wash it off. But of course that's only if the bird was chai. And if it's chai, that's good. You can wash it off. But what about if it's roasted? So now if it's roasted, the surface is more likely to absorb. And over there, it's boi klipa. And this is furthermore only if it hasn't cracked. Now, if the meat has started cracking, which often happens after it's been deeply roasted. So now there's actually places where the kamchan can get into it. If it be pile, so that it could have absorbed all the way deep inside, it could have absorbed the kutach that's absorbed through the cracks. This is a machlokas, by the way, halakha lamaisa. Whether this is talking about only meat that was roasted will absorb through the cracks, or even hot meat that isn't roasted, if cracked, will absorb through the cracks, even though it doesn't have that same level of cracking. And the other thing that we need to take into consideration is it has it been spiced? If it's been spiced, then the spicing also makes it very soft. It's going to absorb deeply. And imetubo betavle, it's all going to become ulcer. Even if it doesn't have cracks, it's going to be very soft and absorptive because of that. Omar Rav, another issue is, now, this is a major question that comes up all the time. It is so important that Yaakov, who normally keeps his iPhone, never shares his beautiful picture, has had some serious issues with it in his own kitchen, and which resulted in some serious expenses about how many ovens do you need in a kitchen, which we had long discussions over. I see he's just not going to share that picture. But all right, what can you do? So this is the big issue. What about the smell? When we talk about smell, the Gemara's usage of the word smell is a far more scientific use of the word smell than smell that's used in general language. Smell means in the Gemara molecules in the air. So the question is whether the molecules in the air that will settle into another substance, are they going to osser that other substance if they're osser? The same exact question of absorption, except over here, it's absorption of molecules from the air rather than direct, right? That is called reicha. Again, not to be confused with just smell. So this is a major issue in cooking things together in an oven. So there's going to be a steamy kind of transference of taste because of the reicha. And that the question is that considered to be the equivalent of touching legabi the dinim of basar b'cholav or the dinim of iser? Where would you expect to find the model for all of that if not for Korban Pesach, right? So therefore, here's where it is in this one daf of Pesach that we're going to be talking about the dinim of reicha. So basar shchuta sham, let's get this fatty meat that was roasted in the same oven with basar nevela. Now, this is very similar to the question of tator govar or ilor govar. Because over here, we've got a fatty meat, which is kosher, and we've got a nevela meat, which is very lean, and that doesn't, therefore, have much that could have been vaporized. Remember, again, when we're talking about molecules in the air, it's going to be vaporized fats that we're going to be detecting in the air. So in this case, the basar nevela has very little vaporized material because it's very lean. The kosher meat has a lot of vaporized material. Now, here is where we get into the same question that we had in the Korban Pesach about the tatar govar. In the same way that the gravy that falls onto the oven and then bounces back is considered to now have been affected by the hot earthenware of the oven, cooked by the earthenware, the same thing would be true over here if the vaporized fats of the basar that was kosher have now made the basar that was the nevela into something that is full of vaporized fats, albeit kosher fats, but now it is going to start vaporizing from the mixture of the fats that it absorbed, and now that would mean that everything is going to become treif because of the original vaporized fats that came from the basar shamin that was kosher that are now coming back to it from the basar nevela in the same way that the gravy asr the Korban Pesach. Brilliant, right? So that's the question. What's the halacha? Says Rav, listen, it's going to be asr. Why? Because mefat me'ad me'ad dane. They are going to end up fattening each other because the non-vaporizing material will absorb from the vaporized fats and will now re-vaporize treif nevela, and therefore it's no good. But if you start off with basar shchuta, which itself is lean, and then you will be so layer that with basar shamay, that it's itself, the reason that that will be kosher is because there all you have is only the reicha. And reicha is not considered to be milsahi. So in other words, where you started off with where you've got something which is full of this fats and it will make the other thing considered to be full of fat. So now both of them, and certainly, I mean, when Rav was saying, if the nevela was fatty, So then the for sure would be usher. He's trying to tell us even if the veil wasn't fatty, it becomes fatty. That's what he's saying. If both are not fatty, so you've got two pieces of lean meat, there would be no problem. But if we only have a transference of recha alone, so that's not enough to make the actual meat treif. And there was a maisa, according to Levi, because Levi holds that even if it would be the other way around, we've had an actual piece of meat, recha lav milta. You know, this is a tremendously important machlokas halacha lamaisa, because Levi says, even if it's basar shchuta, which is together with basar devela shomen, which, oh my God, then that means the original, the vaporized fats are all treif, doesn't matter, because it's only recha. And Levi even did this with actual bacon. And he comes in, Levi Avaduv de Beresh Galuta, where he found those wonderful servants of the Resh Galuta. They went ahead and they were cooking a goat together with, I won't even say that word, a dover acher. And it was all cooking together. And he paskined that it was mutter according to his own shita, because even though it was a nice, big, fat little piggy, it was nonetheless not going to aser because it's only recha. Made fate. Here is the problem from the Korban Pesach, which seems to show that Levi is wrong. Ein solin shnei pesachim keachad. You can't put two Korban Pesachs into the same oven. Why? Mipnei ha-tarovet. Now, I mean, I'm assuming a tarovet means that you're going to have taste coming from Pesach A, which will be absorbed by Pesach B, and therefore will be eaten by non-registered participants. It will be a Pesach Echel Shalom Limenuyav. So you can't have the taste of the Pesach in the other Pesach, right? So you see from there that even the smell, again, I hate that word smell because it doesn't mean that, even the vaporized materials are considered to be an actual iser, not like Levi. No, says Levi. Doesn't mean that. It means if you put two Korban Pesachs into the same oven, you're liable to take out the wrong one. So that Chabura A takes out Chabura's B Pesach. Whereas like this, if it's marked in different ovens, you're not going to come to make that kind of mistake. That's the issue. Of course, that's the issue. Read further. It says, Midiktani Seifa, even if one of these Korban Pesach was a goat and the other one was a lamb. I mean, if it's about the taste, who cares if it's goat or lamb? It would still be exactly the same. If you're talking to me about goats and lambs, then it means, and you would think that you wouldn't make the mistake of being a chabura that knows darn well that you bought a goat and how come now you're eating a lamb. But we're even afraid as that might happen, because everybody's in a rush and you might end up taking the wrong piece and cutting it up and no one will notice, whatever. So if the problem is, like Levi claimed, that we're talking about two separate karbanas in which we're worried you'll take the wrong one, it makes sense to say, even if one is a gedia, one is a tlet. But if we're talking about the way that Rav understood it, it makes no sense at all. I mean, what's the difference if it's a gedia or a tlet? If we're looking about the transfer of the taste, then what the heck, who cares? So obviously this is a riot to Levi now, right? Now it becomes a kasha on Rav. Why does the Braita pretend over here that we're only worried about the mixture, meaning the confusion between the type of meat, if according to him, it should be a problem in the taste? It seems to be a tiyuf to the Rav, Elamai. So what are you saying now? That al-korcha, the only way to understand this is because you'll get mixed up in the actual korban. But the tarovet of tamim would be mutter, so then this is a stira to Rav, and it should be a tiyuf to the Rav. You're right. You know what? Reb Yirmi, you know what it's talking about over here? You cooked your korban pesach in two different pots, and because of that, there won't be any taste given over. Two different pots? What, have you lost your mind? What pots? You can't put korban pesach in a pot? Steak, they wrote, sakadaitach. No, obviously it doesn't mean literally two separate pots. It means that for all intents and purposes of transferring taste, it might as well be in two different pots. How did you do that? You took a big pile of coal, put it between the two psachim, and now they won't absorb from one another. Now, gentlemen, how well can you insulate one pesach from the other pesach by having a bunch of coals? Certainly, when you're talking about these fats that have now vaporized, it's not really 100% sealing, right? Because of this halacha, you can cover your kugel with silver foil in the oven that you're cooking with something that is the other kind, Fleischig's or Milchig's, as the case may be. You say, well, okay, but I mean silver foil. Everybody knows the experiment of saran wrap, in which you take your pie, cover it with saran wrap, and you put it next to an onion, and take your pie and cover it with silver foil and put it next to an onion. Which one wins? The saran wrap, because the pie tastes like onion. So there you've got an experiment of Recha Milsahi. There it means literally Recha, right? It's in the fridge, and it's still, you don't eat that pie. Okay, so what's the heter for putting on a little bit of silver foil, or what they do in the plains, you know, two layers of silver foil, and so on and so forth. So what you see from here is exactly this issue. We don't care about Recha if it isn't really fully open. So you made it like an einsteak there. It's okay, so of course it leaks a little bit through the, but that isn't the point. So it's amazing how no gear, like the Dafim and Korban Pesach, should be the mocker of airline food. It's just like, whoa. Okay, that's really fantastic. So therefore, it's Ke'en Shtei Kederot, where you don't have a Tarovet Tami. Even there, says Rav, that's what it's coming to tell you. It's still going to be Aser because of the Tarovet Gufin, and that's even if the Gufin are noticeable, and it's a Gdi and a Tile. Omer of Mari, you should know, this is a big machlokas of Tanoim. It's not just Rav and Levi, because we've got a Mishnah in Trumas that says like this. You take some hot bread off of an oven, and you set it down on a barrel of wine. Now, the question is, if the wine is truma, so then Rabbi Meir says, well, if you're not a Kohen, you're not going to be allowed to eat that bread because it's absorbed the molecules of the wine. And Rabbi Yehuda is matir. Rabbi Yossi says, well, it depends what kind of bread it is. If it's wheat bread, then it doesn't absorb very much. If it's barley bread, yes, then you can't eat it because it's going to have the taste of truma wine in it because barley is very absorptive. Anyway, apparently this is a machlokas, the same machlokas as Rav and Levi, between the shitas over here. Is the bread mutter or not? So over here, Rav Yehuda clearly holds that we don't care about the recha like Levi. And the other, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, hold we do. It's just a question of how much. So Levi's got no choice. He's got to accept the fact. Look, I mean, there are people saying it's usher, and according to me, it's not us at all. Oh, my gosh. So obviously, the most that I can claim is that, well, at least Rabbi Yehuda agrees with me, and I'm going a little bit of Rabbi Yehuda. Must Rav accept that it's a machlokas tanoim, says Rava? Of course not. Nobody in his right mind would say like Levi. Everybody agrees that Recha's milsehi. And look, I'm not the guy who's got to tell you this. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana has quoted Reish Lakish, who defined that Mishnah, saying that, listen, I mean, obviously it depends. If you're talking about hot bread and you're talking about an open barrel of wine, everybody is made of that. In that case, of course, it was going to be osir because for sure it absorbed. Hello. It for sure it absorbed what? Recha. So you see, everybody agrees with me. And if it was cold bread and the wine was sealed, then of course there's nothing to absorb. I mean, surely that doesn't mean it has anything to do with Levi, right? There's no Recha there. The machlokas was if, now here again, we've got the same kind of situation. One is the equivalent of hot and one is the equivalent of cold. So we've got the pot is hot, but the chavis is closed, or the pot is cold and the chavis is open. So there we find the machlokas. And this case, which we were talking about over here, the two types of psachim, or two types of meats together, is the equivalent of exchanging molecules between pat chama and chavit ptucha. And I feel everybody agrees with me. It's only a question of how much recha there is, even a libid rebuna. Tani Rivkana, Breda Rivchinana Saba. Let's say that you baked bread together with meat in an oven. You cannot eat that bread together with your kutach because the kutach is very milchiks and this bread is very fleishiks. Now, it doesn't mean that we answer it. Note, before we said if you actually make fleishka bread, you're not allowed to use it because over there people are so used to using bread with anything that they're going to come to be eating basar b'chol. Over here, it doesn't answer that. because the bread is not really milchka bread or fleshka bread. But because of the recha, lechatchila, we tell you not to eat it with this other thing. But it's not that the bread itself becomes osir because of the gezerah. And the same thing, we had a case of somebody who roasted fish together with meat, and Rava Miparzikia said, you're not allowed to eat that fish with kutach, because it's got the taste of the meat in it. Mar Bar Rav Ashi says, hey, wait a minute. Fish and meat. You can't eat it even without the kutach. That's dangerous, man. Everybody knows that. Even just to eat it with a little bit of salt, which is the way you would normally eat the fish, you can't. Why? Because fish that has been cooked with meat is not good for your odor and is not good for something else. And that is a reference to Tzaraas. Because of that, we're very machmer on fish and meat because of the sakana question that's involved there. And over there, some are even more machmer in these issues of tatar gavar or recha of fish and meat than they would be on normally things. Now, let me just again, I know we're towards our end, I should say beyond our end, okay? But because this is so nogea, I just want to point out a number of choshava issues, which is that as we paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, there are two other factors which need to be taken into consideration when you're talking about the transference of taste in an oven. One is the size of the oven. So if it's larger than 12 Isronot, which is Samach on the Shir of Mincha and so on, as the Shulchan Aruch points out, and it's also open or has venting, so then it's not going to aser because of Recha, which would mean that all of these chumras that people have of the having two ovens because they're worried about if they cook something fleishiks, then they shouldn't be allowed to cook milchiks because now the oven has become fleishiks with the fleishik atam in it or vice versa, and therefore they need two ovens. Today, a standard oven is the standard built-in oven is 60 liters or more. In the States, the normal ovens are 100 liters, which is way beyond the 30 or so liters of Yud Beis Esreinais. Even according to Chazon Ish, 40 liters. I mean, but certainly not, never. I mean, unless you're talking about a microwave, that is indeed small. But a real oven is large. And the only ovens that would really be treif are the kosher ovens. And that's because, I don't mean that to be facetious, but it's really true. What they do is they sell around here specially authorized dual ovens so that you can have a milchika and fleshika oven in one unit, and there it doesn't take up so much space in your kitchen, right? The problem is that in order to make it kosher, they don't have a vent, because otherwise the vents would mix the timing. Plus, they make it smaller, which means that if you cook the wrong thing in the wrong kosher oven, then it's not kosher. But if you cook it in a non-kosher oven, then it's fine. So, it's just one of those ironies. Anyway, so most of the time, this really won't be. I mean, obviously, you have to look at the particular unit that you have and see what the situation is. But not to mention that, of course, based on what we just learned today, if you will use aluminum foil, even if it isn't tight, around what it is that you're worried is making your oven fleishik or milchik. So then even if it was in there at the same time, it wouldn't be a problem. Kosher cane, even if you are worried, once it would already be not there at the same time, with our modern ovens, we really shouldn't have to worry about this. I mean, this is, I'm telling you what I grew up with G'dayle Torah, nobody had two ovens. It was unheard of. So they were not makvit. Again, nowadays, I really don't know why it is that people don't want to be semich on it, but again, I think people that stick to the strict halacha are not makban having two ovens. I guess, you know, biko matzah v'godar bageder is sort of why we have two ovens, very similar to the ideas of tatar gavar and nilar gavar.